This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Friday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well. A beautiful Friday afternoon and the start of a big weekend. It is Big Cat Weekend. It's Cheers on the Corner downtown Auburn tonight.
Auburn Network, a presenting sponsor of Cheers on the Corner this year. So you check out the Wings Wagon and some Auburn Network
stuff,
personalities, oh, yeah. Some swag. Are you gonna you checking out Cheers on the Corner tonight?
Oh, yeah, we were talking about that a while ago. Obviously, it'll be a little later before we get there, since we get off at 6 and that's when it starts. But runs till 10.
Maybe we do. Yeah, you want to do a lap of Cheers on the Corner as the drive crew? Maybe, you know, walk around, grab out. Yeah, let me know when you're headed down there. Maybe,
yeah,
and maybe we can build a station for it if we go say hi at the tent.
Sounds
maybe
good.
You know, go to the tent and say it's a remote.
I'm sure that'll fly. So yeah, so that's coming up tonight. Looks like a great night for it, though. I mean, it has been gorgeous weather here today. We'd love for you to join in here on the Friday. You realize this is the last Friday drive that there won't be football of some type going on until, what, February? January for sure, sometime in January.
By the way, interesting.
I mean, because football practice starts next Thursday.
Speaking of football practice, interesting piece of news. I was passed by, I believe I saw this, I think Perry Thompson may have posted about this on Instagram, among other things.
I didn't
see that. The practice that will be open to On to Victory members only closed to the public on Saturday, August 10th. That's being advertised right now for On to Victory members who want to check that out. That's I believe before.
That's an incentive to join.
And had Auburn announced that there was going to be a fan day that day? Because
no, but I mean, it's normally
normal.
It normally comes up the you know, the
one of the Saturday practices,
second or third weekend.
Traditionally, one of the Saturday practices could be a fan day. Well, I would
Saturday or Sunday. Yeah.
I would book August 10th. As fan day, since that they mentioned that maybe before, all that says before fan day. So maybe this could be the Saturday
practice, and then after practice, probably would make the players available.
Or it could be the Saturday before fan day, where it's a special practice that you only get to see as an On to Victory member. Then fan day is a week later, potentially. They could be doing that too. But what I know is that the August 10th practice has been designated as. And I think that's the fan day. I think that's going to be the fan day practice. And then there's an extra hour that's On to Victory members only, maybe, or something along those lines. Maybe the practice will be closed to everybody, but
figure. That would make sense. That practice would be closed. Then following practice, you know, the players shower and you'd be able to have fan day. Because a lot of times, I mean, you'll do fan day in the arena. You'll do fan day.
That's probably right.
At a place where it's cooler. So the players can be sitting around and be able to sign autographs.
Well, so August 10th would be bookmark
that
one.
A lot of sense.
If you're an On to Victory member, I would hope that that folks like us can maybe sneak in there anyway for some of that.
Yeah,
but we'll see. We might have to share an On to Victory subscription or something to get into a practice like that one. But it's like your point, Bill, about this weekend will be the last weekend, Big Cat weekend, but the last weekend without. Either football practice or, I mean, we're coming up on what, just four or five Saturdays left before it's going to be college football season.
Yeah, I think it's 5 weeks. 5 weeks from tomorrow.
Remarkable, yeah.
Is Auburn's first game. 4 weeks from tomorrow are the first games. 4 weeks from today is Auburn High's first game. So, I mean, we are rapidly approaching the start of football season. Big Cat weekend. Big Cat is tomorrow. Quite a few players already making their way in. A couple of commitments and some targets are coming in. When I saw the headline, I thought, oh, it's not Juju. No, it was not Juju Lewis, but another Southern Cal commit is visiting Auburn this weekend, and that is Shamar Arnaud. So, I mean, boy, there have been a lot of players that have been exiting, it seems like, from Lincoln Riley's class this past year and commitments for this coming year.
Oh, it's and you have people speculating on Lincoln Riley's future at USC. You have folks speculating on what coaches might replace Lincoln Riley at USC. I think there's a belief that that could be and part of that I have to imagine is because Lincoln Riley came with Caleb Williams.
Right.
Now that Caleb Williams is gone, I think there are folks wondering if there's a desire on both ends to continue that marriage, right? Is there still a desire from USC to have Lincoln Riley if you're not going to have Caleb Williams as his quarterback? And then there's a desire. I don't know.
I wonder how exciting is it really for USC to be in the Big Ten with all the travel that's involved? I mean, it seems like, oh, that would be exciting, but man, it's going to be convenient.
That's true, but I would point out that in the Pac-12, aside from UCLA and the other Bay Area schools, it's not like the Pac-12 schools were all that close to Los Angeles either. I mean, you're getting on a plane to go to Oregon or Washington or Colorado or Utah, right, or Arizona or Arizona State.
But aren't they still a whole lot closer than
they are? But we're talking about adding an hour to a plane travel for most of these road games, right? I know what you mean. I think the bigger shift is going to be Big Ten teams having to go to California in conference play and then turn around and play either at home or play another. Like to me, the bigger adjustment there is going to be. Now, for fans in Los Angeles who used to go to the games, it's probably a lot tougher to go to.
Yeah.
That I agree. Especially some folks might have RVs, right? They used to go.
Yeah,
to
you might drive. You might have driven to the game. You're not driving cross country.
You might have driven to Phoenix. You might have driven to Phoenix or the Bay Area.
Sure.
But you're not. Yeah, you're probably not driving to State College, right?
No.
You're probably not making that.
I mean, even to the closer ones, you're not driving to, you know, Indiana or Minnesota, or like, come on.
And even the ones that came with you in the conference, right? Like Oregon and Washington are not, I mean,
they're not next door.
They're not next door either. But to me, that's because I talked to somebody from the UCLA end about this. I still think the bigger adjustment's going to be, like, it's going to be very strange for Big Ten teams to be playing road games on the West Coast. The West Coast teams have had to travel, especially since that conference grew to Colorado and Utah and stuff. Like the Pac-12 teams on the West Coast have known that there's usually a long trip involved when you're going on the road.
I wonder, and I haven't really checked.
I want to see what USC's
road schedule. I wonder how many of those games they'll want to play earlier. I mean, the network and the conference probably won't want a lot of, you know, 7 o'clock Pacific Coast kicks, do you think?
See, but I wonder if they're going to want to start games at noon Eastern in California, right? Because that's going to be
that's 9 o'clock in the morning.
That's a 9 o'clock kick.
I would think that'd be tough. I can see the 2:30 window or what's 2:30 in the 3:30 in the East. It's doable because it's 12:30 at least.
I would think that there are going to be Big Ten conference games at the Rose Bowl and at the Coliseum. My assumption would be are going to be played under the lights a lot, and then you're going to send those
teams.
Man,
that's good. What a pain that's going to be for the teams that are coming cross country and having to play that late kick.
That's what I mean. That's going to be. I think the road games on the West Coast are going to be a bigger adjustment than the West Coast than the West Coast teams that are. I mean, because Oregon, I think Oregon, Washington, and the Los Angeles teams, are used to long road trips because you've been playing them in the conference. Maybe they're not multiple time zones.
Yeah, that's the thing. They haven't been time zones.
But they've been multiple hours in the air and far from home. These Big Ten teams, they're not used to playing these kind of games.
No, it is such a change to your body when you're used to practicing at a certain time, playing at a certain time. Even if you're playing, you know, and we know that the early kicks are ones where a lot of times teams are sluggish at that early kick. Well, imagine, you know, doing that, and man, if they did have a big noon kickoff on the West Coast, a 9 a.m. kick, of course, that's penalizing the West Coast teams. But the teams that are coming in from the East, it's going to be like, you know, it's going to be like starting games at 10, 11 o'clock their time.
We know that USC's first Big Ten game will be in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and it will be at 2:30 on CBS. So that will be USC, and that's what a way for the Big Ten to jump into.
USC Michigan. That's a
USC heck of a game. USC Michigan and Ann Arbor at 2:30 on CBS. That's going to be CBS's debut as the Big Ten. You know, with Big Ten games at 2:30, Big Ten conference games at 2:30 instead of SEC games.
All right. So that's 12. That's 12:30 for the Trojan.
Your USC home games in conference play this year. They host Wisconsin the week after that Michigan game. They host they host Penn State. In the middle of October, they host Rutgers towards the end of October. They host Nebraska in November, and those are the teams that go to the Coliseum. And
Penn State,
Rutgers, Nebraska, and Wisconsin are the four teams that drew the USC road games this year in the Big Ten. And I would think all four of those teams.
They're all four hoping they're not nut games.
It's a long trip, and you would think that playing them, that's the situation. I've had people ask me about, you know, like
who do they?
Well, you know, and I'll pivot this to the SEC for a sec. Someone asked me very recently, like, is Auburn at an advantage because Georgia plays Alabama the week before the Auburn game, and I don't know the answer.
Auburn
to that.
Is definitely not at a disadvantage.
Not at a disadvantage, and it's probably better than Georgia having a bye week
when you're playing a team. Let's see,
Auburn's playing Oklahoma that day.
So I mean, it's not a huge advantage if you have an open date and another team is playing a very good, talented, physical team on the road. Yeah, they're liable to come back beat up a little bit when you play them. But it's not like Auburn's playing a nobody in Oklahoma the week before.
If you were telling me Georgia was across the country the week before,
oh, yeah.
I would wonder about, like, even if
yeah,
it wasn't.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Who do these teams play the next week? Who does Wisconsin play the next
like,
week?
If you're with, I mean, I'll pull up with, yeah, looking at Wisconsin.
I'm not as concerned about who Rutgers plays the next week.
So, like, Wisconsin, a week after going to USC, hosts Purdue. You'd be a little nervous about what you might see out of, unless Purdue's also taking a West Coast trip there, which I don't believe.
That would be really cool if they could pair teams up. Sort of, you're traveling cross country and then you're going to play back at
Purdue does not take a West Coast Big Ten trip this year, but they've got they do go to Corvallis in the out of conference slate early on, so they play at Oregon State early in the schedule. But no, I see your point about like the. You know that's going to be the big shakeup for the Big Ten teams having to welcome in USC, UCLA, Washington, and Oregon. I also think they're going to have to deal with the fact that Oregon is maybe the third most talented team in the league. People love this Oregon team.
USC's got some talent.
USC's got some talent too. But Washington was in the national championship game last year. Although Washington, I believe it's some crazy number, like 19 of the 22 starters for Washington in that game are not on the team anymore. Like, I believe there's only two. Wow. I think it's only two or three starters from last year's national championship game that are still on.
So Alabama's got as many starters from last year's national championship
and the coach.
Game, Washington.
and the head
as
coach.
Washington does.
And the head coach. Yeah, no, I think that's a – like if Washington had a tough time adjusting this year with everything that's changed, you know, it's practically a new two deep, a new head coach, a good head coach. Jed Fish was winning it. I mean, Arizona – would have been in the playoff conversation last year. Arizona was in the top 15 at the end of the season and was probably a game away from being a 10-2 team, at least flirting with one of those at large bids.
Right.
So now he's the head coach in Washington, but it's a different lot of ways.
334-321-1390. That is the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. Would love for you to join us on that.
You can also text the show 334-564-1840 on the Drive text box presented by our good friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts.
We're just underway. Love for you to join in as we continue with the Friday Drive.
Experience and knowledge from the pros. Russell DeWitt Center at Building Supply.
Russell Building Supply is your hometown home improvement store.
382-7502 or email the drive at espnau.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Friday afternoon. Bill and Dan, Drew, a little under the weather. So we told him to
that's what he says.
To take the day off.
We believe
that's fine. Long weekend, whatever. That's fine. Drew, not with us here today.
We were
so
sick
Dan's at the controls.
We were sick of him, as a matter of fact. So no, it's no. Drew's all the best to Drew. Hopefully he's all right, and we will welcome him back on Monday.
Yeah, I mentioned Big Cat is really it is tomorrow. But a lot of the players going ahead and making their way in. You've got, reports of quite a few different players who are already in town. Thus far, I guess the Shamar Arnaud, who I mentioned a few minutes ago, he's a defensive back out of Carrollton, Georgia. Southern Cal had really hit the Southeast hard. Don't know how many of those players are going to end up being in the class for the Trojans in December, but there's another one from the state of Georgia. Remember, I think they had three or four players from the state of Georgia, and most of them have decommitted, other than Juju Lewis. But Arnaud is the first player I believe that I have seen that wasn't on just about everybody's expected list of players to be coming in. Now it looks like there's going to be a group of 50 or 60, 20, 25, 26, and probably a couple of 27s as well. The players expected to be in include, I believe, all the Auburn commits are expected to be in. Let's see, the commits, and I'll read them in order of...
Well, and before you get to the list, like we were talking about it yesterday when someone called and wanted sort of the significance of the origins of Big Cat Weekend, and one of the thoughts behind it from Gene Chizik and Trooper Taylor, Curtis Looper, Gus Malzahn, the key recruiters and coaches there for that 2009 team, the thinking was you bring these guys in. If you can build some camaraderie between these guys, if they can start to feel like they have friends,
they want to play with guys that they really get along with.
They'll be more excited about getting to play, and they might be more likely to keep their commitments. Right, they might be more likely to stay committed between Big Cat and signing day if they feel like they're not venturing into the unknown. They're not going on their own. Mm-hmm. They got a band of brothers, going with them.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's something that I think they've attempted. And I wonder if that's one of the reasons why weekends like Big Cat have become so fashionable within college football, because now you're seeing other places that didn't do a Big Cat weekend type of event.
Well, you see, just about everybody is doing something. To this extent, a family friendly fun get together, not going to have the pressure of an official visit recruiting weekend.
So before you do the list, I just want to say, because he might be listening, shout out to Gene Chizik for something that has become. It wasn't just Gene Chizik, obviously, but he was the head coach.
Absolutely,
of that. I mean,
he was the head coach of the school that started something that has become. Yeah. A trend. It is just about a must-have
for
every school now.
He can take credit for hiring Curtis Looper and Trooper Taylor, too, if you want to give credit for Big Cat Weekend to those guys, understandably. But Gene Chizik was there in the room when they got their jobs. He made that call. So, shout out to Gene Chizik and company for starting something that has become not just a really big deal for Auburn every summer, but it's become a pretty big deal and an event that it has been emulated across the industry.
Oh, you're absolutely right about that. Yeah, I was just going to run down the some of the guys that were expected to be here. The Auburn commits expected to be here. Malik Autry from Opelika. Ja'Caleb Falk, Keldrick Falk's younger brother from Highland Home. Jordan Crawford, defensive lineman from Parker. Rylan Gay from Milton, Georgia, one of the tight ends. Auburn is, needing to reload the tight end room after this year. Eric Winters, the outstanding safety from Enterprise. Tavares Dice, offensive lineman from Langston Hughes in Georgia. Defensive back Donovan Starr from Ravenwood, Tennessee. Defensive back Devin Williams from Buford, Georgia. Running back Alvin Henderson from Elba. I believe he's. I've seen he's already in town. Offensive lineman Ty Buster from North Carolina. Tight end Hollis Davidson from McIntosh, who was an Auburn commit, decommitted, and is recommitted.
Buster, a great last name.
I love that.
Football player.
I love that. Yes.
Who are you going to call, Bill?
Yeah, you're going to call Ty Buster. Yeah, you're going to call. He's an offensive lineman.
The ghost.
Yeah.
Ty the Ghostbuster.
Let's see. The other commits expected to be in Dante Corr, defensive back from Fort Walton Beach. And
Choctaw or Fort Walton, you know?
He's from Fort Walton.
Okay, all right.
And Bryce Diaz. When we first saw it, you know, we were thinking it was Diaz, but it's Diaz, and he is the teammate of Blake Woodby, the Ohio State commit. So those are the commits expected to be in that will be helping, as you said, try to convince some of these other very highly sought after players to join them.
Hearing Don Dunn affirm one of my long held beliefs about Auburn football, and it was nice last week or whatever it was, when he talked about how, because Auburn is aside from Florida State, Auburn being the closest program to the Mobile to Panama City corridor,
along the Panhandle.
There were probably opportunities where Auburn. I think Don Dunn even said, like, there were times when we probably could have been earlier on guys, and there were guys we missed out on, and that's an area that he wishes they'd hit harder during his tenure. See Fort Walton Beach among the I mean, Bill, you're aware there's some pretty good players in Panama City
and
Pensacola.
Well, I mean, I grew up, you know, just north of the Panhandle there in South Alabama, all the players used to – I mean, back when, you know, I mean, was keeping up with, the players there in Northwest Florida.
I believe Gus signed two or three kids out of Panama City in his most recent – I know he had – I think Mosley teammates went to UCF in his last signing class, so he hasn't forgotten about – the Florida Panhandle. They're now he's at UCF, and that's also a place where, I mean, he's got multiple connections from his days at Auburn that have gone with him to UCF, and they're hitting that area too. But now cool to see Fort Walton Beach on the list. Of course, Auburn was in on that Niceville linebacker who ended up at he's in the SEC. Did he go to Missouri?
Yes,
that's right. He did the one. Yeah, he's the South Alabama transfer who followed his He didn't follow Kane Womack to Alabama, but he followed a previous defensive coach.
Right.
His coordinator is now at Missouri.
Is now at Missouri. That's exactly right.
By the way, there were some. That's something we didn't really talk about in media days. Was that? That now that the Missouri DC is at LSU, that was very much a, like, I mean. Not that there's animosity necessarily, but you could tell Eli Drinkwitz was, I mean, he was complimentary, but he wanted to keep it short and sweet and terse.
When somebody leaves you and goes to another team, now, you know, there's no divisions anymore, but I mean, goes to another team in your conference.
Same job, too.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, it wasn't as though he went from, a position coach to jumping to
DC. And I guess Eli's feeling, hey, we won more games than LSU did last year. What's he going there for? LSU,
money.
Well, and LSU generally is going to be a more talented roster.
You would guess that LSU wins more games over the next five years than Missouri will. That's not to say that it couldn't happen the other way. I mean, I think if
Missouri is set pretty well for the near future, at least.
Missouri has. I mean, I keep saying Missouri has eight games where they should be solidly favored, and that number could be nine, depending on how Auburn looks going to Columbia.
Well, I mean, we were looking at it. We were looking at it the other day yesterday or the day before when I was talking about some teams don't play, who Ole Miss, who teams don't play. Missouri's in that exact same thing.
Missouri drew one of the top five teams.
That's
in the league,
right.
Alabama's
and it's Alabama.
It's Alabama.
And Alabama is picked, third or fourth.
Third, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they do not play the teams that were picked 1-2 in the league.
We were saying, like, Auburn only drew two of the top five this year. If your top five is – who was fifth? Was fifth Missouri or LSU? I forget who finished.
LSU.
Okay, so if LSU was projected fifth in the conference this year, Auburn only drew two of the top five teams, Alabama and Georgia. Missouri only drew one. Mm-hmm. I mean, under those
same. Yeah, it's a great situation for Missouri.
It's an excellent draw, in part, and that's not to say that Missouri. I mean, Missouri could still be one of the six or seven best teams in the league. But to say, you're the sixth best team, seventh best team in the SEC, and you are solidly favored in 9 of your 12 games right now. And that's now the number's probably 8 because I think when Auburn, I want to see what it looks like when Auburn goes to Missouri.
But it's going
to
be at at Columbia. Right, Columbia. Now they're a double digit favorite.
I would say the books and stuff would tell you right now that you're getting 7 to 10 points, maybe more if you're wanting
all
to
right,
bet Auburn
who
side.
Who besides all right, you think there'll be an underdog at A&M in addition to at Alabama? I'm just looking. Their road games are at A&M, at UMass, at Alabama, at South Carolina, at Mississippi State.
I would say A&M, Alabama, and Oklahoma are the three games.
Oklahoma they've got at home
at
as well.
At home as well. But I would think those are the three games that are where I wouldn't say Missouri is solidly favored. But I don't know what – I mean, but Auburn and Oklahoma –
Missouri
games,
may be favored in all their games except – the trip to Tuscaloosa.
Yeah.
They may be favored in 11 of their 12 games.
And I would think that an 11-1 season with a loss to Tuscaloosa.
11-1 season gets them in the 12. There's no question about
maybe
that.
It maybe gets them in the SEC championship game. Like yeah, depending on, I mean, right. depending on how things
well,
shake out.
Well, that means out, they're 7-1.
You're 7-1 and your lone
loss.
You're
7-1, they're going to be in the SEC title game.
Yeah. If you're 7-1 and you're only lost to Alabama.
Because Jason Caldwell sat right there and said he doesn't think anybody in the SEC is going unbeaten.
Well, I mean, if Georgia's the best team and they're going to Austin, Tuscaloosa, and Oxford,
right?
The numbers 2, 3, and 4 in the conference. No, I think there's absolutely questions about how what kind of season Georgia could have.
Missouri should have been picked higher. Look at their schedule.
Yeah,
they should have been picked.
What
higher.
Do you think? If I gave you over
9-3 would almost be a disappointment for Missouri with this schedule.
If you had to pick Missouri's record and you couldn't say 9-3 regular season, if the over under was 9 and you had to go over or under, you couldn't push.
Golly, I don't know if I want to go over.
I think I'd go over because four. I mean,
they get Oklahoma and Auburn at home.
They have to lose both of those to go 8-4.
Yeah,
they'd have to lose at home to both Oklahoma and Auburn, which I'm not sure they're going to do.
No, because I mean their non conference games are Murray State, Buffalo, Boston College and UMass.
10-2 means they went. 10-2 means
what,
they went.
What is with them in the Northeastern schools?
I don't understand why they're
Buffalo,
playing.
Buffalo, Boston College, and UMass.
They're at UMass.
Yeah.
How do you play a home and home? Like, what are you doing playing a home and home with? How do you not find the money to cancel that and switch it out in a championship season potentially? You're gonna be in the SEC championship game maybe, and you're playing at UMass. What are you doing? But it's no. I mean, 10-2 means they went 2-2. In the Oklahoma, Auburn, Alabama, and A&M games.
Yeah. I think you're right.
I think they could do that.
I mean, it's hard to just go, yes, they're going to win 10, but they should win 10.
I think, yeah. I mean, if you told me over or under 9, if I couldn't pick 9 and I had to pick a record for Missouri, I would probably go 10-2 over 8-4. Like, I think that, and that's, and like you said, they've got a shot at 11-1, depending on, I mean, and I would, and look, and that's not, they don't need to, you don't even need to, you don't even need to think they have a chance in Tuscaloosa.
No,
and they could go 11. Right. They could go 11-1 with this schedule and be in the SEC championship game potentially at 7-1. Could at the very least come down to tiebreakers and stuff. Mm-hmm.
It's hard to believe there'd be three teams in the conference with one or fewer losses.
Hard to believe you're not in the 12-team playoff. Either,
oh yes,
at that situation. So that's you can tell why Eli's thinking maybe he's got he's on the verge of something really big this year in Columbia, Missouri.
All right, we'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. We'll look at some of the other players visiting Big Cat as we move on through the show. But come on in and join us. Anything on your mind sports wise as we continue with the Friday Drive.
Or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Friday afternoon. Bill and Dan here in the studio. Love for you to join in. Anything on your mind sports-wise, 334-321-1390. That's The Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skyball.
There has been some, and I know we've talked about this a little bit, and we don't talk a ton of NBA on this.
No, but this is interesting.
Yeah, so there's, and Charles Barkley is involved sort of at the heart of this, so it's an Auburn story too. The NBA rights deals that came up a couple weeks ago, it's been rumored for a while that with the NBA's rights to the television rights to the NBA were up after this upcoming season. This upcoming season was the last year where they were dealing with ESPN and TNT under the rights they signed about a decade ago. The NBA was expecting, especially with all the new partners, streaming services involved in the bidding, the NBA was expecting a, and the fact that the live sports are consistently drawing live viewers more than just about anything else in the television business.
Oh, it's almost all of the live viewing.
Yeah, especially as you try to fight, that's something where you can actually get people to watch the advertising as opposed to stuff mm-hmm. that people will watch on demand and on streaming services, things like that. So the NBA was soliciting new offers from, they have two partners right now, ESPN and Warner Brothers Discovery, who owns TNT and TBS. The NBA was going to go to three partners. They wanted two television partners and a streaming partner. Mm-hmm. A lot of these companies own streaming services too, but the NBA wanted to be represented on broadcast television. They wanted to be on cable television. They wanted to be on a streaming service. The NBA they've decided the best deals were with ESPN, NBC, who will also put games on Peacock and on USA. It's going to be kind of like the Olympic coverage mm-hmm. this year. And the third partner, Amazon, looking to strengthen their live coverage of sports. They wanted something to be able to show on Thursday nights when the NFL season is over. The Amazon has their Thursday night NFL game. I think they're planning on having at least a doubleheader every Thursday night of NBA games following the NFL season. Now, part of and that would leave TNT, who has shown NBA games for much of the last three decades, that would leave TNT out in the cold.
And that feel that feels like a shame because I mean they were there before the NBA was huge.
And TNT is now owned by a company called Warner Brothers Discovery, which was merged through the Discovery Channel and the cable networks on the Discovery Unscripted family of networks, HGTV, Food Network, Discovery, TLC, like those channels. Mm-hmm. That company has since merged with Warner Brothers, which owns HBO, CNN, TBS, TNT, Cartoon Network. And so and those are two very different, like the philosophies of those two companies, the way they've created content is very different.
Yes.
And I think that I would think that the Discovery Channel brand of trying to avoid really big ticket items and cut costs that way, it seems to be, I mean, they've turned away from some really big, they've cut costs at HBO, they've cut costs with original content at TBS mm-hmm. and TNT, and now maybe their most important partner in a company that would have cost them, I mean, it probably would have cost Warner Brothers Discovery somewhere in the neighborhood of $1.8 to $2 billion a year to keep NBA games. That's about the revenue that TNT brings in cable carriage fees a year. Like, that's about what TNT brings in a year. I would say about 70 to 100, and maybe a little bit more than that a month. And so to keep the NBA. So Warner Brothers Discovery wanted to keep the NBA. They thought that they had the rights to match any one of these three deals that the NBA struck with their
Okay, so that's what happened.
Yes.
Because we heard the other day that they had.
Yes, and so their interpretation was that they could match Amazon's part of the deal, which was streaming only and would be for about $1.8 billion. Here's the issue. Warner Brothers Discovery wanted to match Amazon's deal and still carry those games on TNT.
Right.
The NBA is saying, if you want to match Amazon's streaming only deal,
it's for streaming only.
It needs to be streaming only. Warner Brothers Discovery does not want to pay $2 billion just to show NBA games on HBO Max. They would want those games to be on their cable network to keep their cable networks viable. There is a belief that if Warner Brothers Discovery loses the NBA, the cable companies that decide which networks and how much you pay, the company that you pay your bill to, YouTube TV.
Yes,
they might decide
we don't need these channels anymore.
Will you keep cable without TNT? Maybe without when NBA playoff games were on TNT.
Yeah,
it was vital to keep TNT on your slate of cable networks. If you take the NBA away, it suddenly becomes a little bit dicier as far as what's going to happen. And the NBA is not going. I mean, I think Warner Brothers Discovery has tried to go on a PR offensive, trying to talk about trying to vilify the NBA a little bit and say they're breaking.
Look at what we've done for you.
They're breaking their deal with us.
Yes.
And everything. It's all negotiation. The NBA has decided this thing can be fought out in court, and they feel pretty good about their position. And I think the root cause of it is can Warner Brothers Discovery match, can they match the Amazon part of the deal and still put those games on television?
I would think not.
I would think not, too. And I would also think that if they could, NBC and ESPN would be saying, well, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Like, that devalues our product a little bit, because now our games on television aren't as special if there are also games on TNT. So I think the NBA is probably going to win this thing. Maybe there's going to be a settlement, maybe not, but they're moving forward in a world where their broadcast partners are going to be ESPN, NBC, and Amazon. And it creates I know the stock has taken a hit for Warner Brothers Discovery.
Oh, it's got to be huge hit.
You have folks wondering, you know, what is the future of broadcast networks like TNT and TBS? The irony, of course, being even 2 years ago, the guy who runs Warner Brothers Discovery, David Zaslav, says, we don't need the NBA on the Turner networks. He could find out.
You're right.
He could find out that maybe in fact they did, but it's looking
it would feel like a shame, because TBS was one of the first.
Oh, sure.
I mean, it was one of your first staples of cable.
Ted Turner is a very important figure in American broadcasting.
No question
about
that.
He's a very important figure in American broadcasting. I kind of, you know what? I've always hated the name Warner Brothers Discovery. I'd have called the thing Turner Broadcasting. Like, I still think the name has cachet. I know, even if Ted Turner's not involved, I still think that, I mean, that's what you think of with CNN and TBS.
Yeah, absolutely, you
and
do.
I mean, that's what the T in TBS and TNT still stands
sure
for.
Sure does.
And I still, I mean, even when we're talking about this, they're trying to use Warner Brothers Discovery, WBD Sports, or HBO Max Sports. It's like, just call the thing Turner Sports. Like, just call, I mean, it's very, but it does seem like a, and people are wondering, what does this mean for Inside the NBA, the TNT aired show with Chuck and Shaq and Ernie and Kenny that's so popular and such a key part of NBA coverage. I think Barkley, I think he's negotiating in public a little bit here, isn't he? He's announced his retirement.
Mm-hmm.
He said that next year will be his last year on TV. I do wonder, I said this on the Observer podcast, I do wonder if he would look at streaming services and say he's not breaking his deal.
Yeah,
not being
that's
on
not TV.
TV. If he went to Amazon and was the key part of their NBA coverage during Amazon. And if you're Amazon, the thought of being able to land Charles Barkley. And,
that would
and,
be huge.
And, I mean, to, and I think he even talked about maybe, you know, with his own production company trying to do a studio show with people. You know, I would think that even if Warner Brothers Discovery loses the NBA, and like we were just saying, it seems likely, I would think there's still a future in basketball coverage if he wants to continue doing it. Now, one thing Barkley said in his retirement was part of the reason he was stepping away is because he thinks it's important for people who played the game recently to be serving as the analysts, and the longer he feels that
he's away from having played.
Yeah, the further he gets from his playing days, the less relevant or incisive about modern NBA basketball he feels he can be with his analysis, which I think is, that's a pretty selfless thing for a broadcaster to do.
Yeah, that's a very smart. I mean, basketball has changed more than, like, a baseball.
Sure.
I mean, baseball, there have been rules changes, but, I mean, you can still have former pitchers and former hitters talking about the fundamentals of the game as compared to the way basketball was played 40 years ago compared to now.
And I'm not speaking about anyone specifically when I say it can be tough to step away from the spotlight when it's, you know, even when it's still welcome to you, like when you're still welcome in the spotlight.
And it's very profitable.
It can be tough to say, you know, I still think the right thing to do is for me to step aside and for someone else to move into this position. And so, yeah, I would think there's still a future for Barkley and Ernie and Kenny and Shaq if they want. I mean, like, I don't think that the NBA leaving TNT behind, you know, moves those guys into the into the cold, and it's but I would think we could be facing the last year of the NBA on TNT and the NBA. And what's gonna be crazy is they could be broadcast partners this final season while their opponents in a courtroom. Like while this
that's
because
right.
Because Warner Brothers Discovery has sued. Like that's the news today, is that Warner Brothers Discovery is suing, claiming that that they've matched the rights, they've fulfilled their end of the contract, and the NBA
it's all going to depend on the wording of the contract. I mean, if somebody who wrote it where they could match anyone's bids, then they've got a great case.
And how clear was the language about streaming services when this contract was written? You know, and whenever it was written, could this thing? It feels like it could come down to the NBA giving Warner Brothers Discovery a financial settlement if it's not, because I can't imagine a scenario where the NBA is on Warner Brothers Discovery against their will, right? Because the contract says they have to be. Like, that feels like if the NBA wants to go with three other partners,
right,
then if anything, it could be a financial deal to make Warner Brothers Discovery whole again.
Yeah, it'd be just a settlement, some type of settlement.
But if you're talking about catastrophic damage to TBS and TNT because they don't have basketball anymore, I don't know what that settlement looks like. I don't know. And it still feels like the folks who analyze stocks are telling you Warner Brothers Discovery without the NBA is a pretty shaky bet.
Yeah,
like
I'm sure.
Because there's a question of how important do those cable? I mean, what do you do? What do you do to replace the NBA on TNT to keep the cachet you have right now?
No, to keep subscribers willing to pay that extra amount.
And
cable companies.
And how do you convince cable companies willing to keep you around?
It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. That's great stuff. Yeah. All right, we'll get to our final break here of hour number one. Still plenty of time. Come on in and join us. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive hotline here on The Drive.
As a second-generation State Farm agent, Callie Bryan Chaddick and her expert team offers multiple years of service to East Alabama for any insurance need. Raised locally in Opelika.
Welcome back into The Drive. Final few minutes of hour number one here on this Friday afternoon. Bill and Dan, we mentioned Big Cat. Coming up this weekend, football practice starting next Thursday. Next Tuesday is the Major League Baseball trade deadline.
That's right.
And there are some trades that are going on now. There have been, I believe, three trades already today.
This weekend
in
is
Major
the
League Baseball.
This is the weekend where it feels like teams are going to have to jump or back away from the cliff, right?
Right?
'Cause it's like now you have a situation where other teams are going after those same players. And so if you're dragging your feet on Zach Eflin,
too late.
Baltimore Orioles.
He's a Baltimore Oriole
if
now.
You're dragging your feet on Randy Arozarena of the
too
Tampa
late.
Bay Rays.
He's a Mariner.
And I would think
Mariners have swung a couple of deals. Mariners have picked up pitching as well as Randy Arozarena. There was a lot of talk about, you know, those guys possibly going to National League teams. You've got so many National League teams right now that are trying to decide whether they're buyers or sellers or maybe both.
You thinking Scooble gets dealt? That's the big name now.
It's
heating up.
It's going to take a huge amount. I mean, it sure seemed more like Flaherty was going to be the guy that the Tigers would ship out.
Who's the guy who says he wants an extension if he's going to post? He's going to pitch in the playoffs? Did you hear about that?
No,
I'm trying to think. There was somebody who would be open to a deal, but because the most he's pitched in is this season, he would want some
Crochet
some,
maybe.
Yeah, maybe it's Garrett Crochet.
Because he's already thrown more innings this year than he's ever thrown in a season.
Crochet would want protection contractually if he's traded to a playoff contender this year.
I think people would be willing, especially if the Sox would just say, here, you know, we won't take as much for him. Because, I mean, people would love to have him because he's got a couple of years left. He would be able to help you for three postseasons, and he is just showing how talented he is this year.
Yeah, Garrett Crochet has requested a contract extension from any team that trades for him this summer because of the because there's questions about his availability and the strain that they would be putting on him going into the playoffs after the kind of season he's had.
The Phillies, meanwhile,
I would not, depending on what kind of contract we're talking about. Like, if this is a deal to buy out his arbitration years and maybe you get a year of, you know, you push free agency back a year, if I'm a contender.
I wouldn't let a guy like this go by a left-hander who is just, I mean, he has been so dominant.
I would not let that back off of my decision. Now, that would pique my interest if I wasn't necessarily a playoff team right now, but yeah. I thought I was going to be pretty good next year.
Yeah, you'd add at least 2 years. You know, hopefully add another year to the two more years. You know, you're already going to have him.
Yeah, I mean, and it would be. I mean, he would. I don't know. Like that's interesting to me because, the thought that that's scaring teams away. I would think maybe that's going to be an opportunity for a smart GM.
Yep. By the way, in the National League, the only team that's made a significant move thus far are the Phillies, adding Austin Hayes today. He was just an all-star last year, not having a great year this year.
This time next week, Jazz Chisholm is a blank.
Is a member of a new team.
Yeah.
I have no idea which one, but he's not going to be a Marlin.
Pinstripes?
Could be.
Infield? The Louisiana guy's real struggling, right?
Oh, LeMahieu?
Yeah, yes. LeMahieu's really struggling there.
He's having the worst year of his career. We'll look at some of the moves and possible moves as well. Coming up in hour number two, as well as talk more Big Cat. Love for you to join in. We're halfway done here on the Friday Drive.
Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in. Hour number two of the Friday Drive. A beautiful Friday afternoon here in Auburn. Hope everybody doing well. Hour number two of the show is brought to you, as usual, by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. It's Bill and Dan here in the studio. Drew, under the weather, so Dan is at the controls, so it's his fault if something doesn't work.
I think we mostly, and I'm not going to jinx myself because I'm sure that
we've got this.
I'm sure the studio, that the control board will be on fire by the end of the show if I say anything. But I feel like the first hour went okay. Most of these buttons, I know when I'm supposed to push them.
Well, there was a little bit. I mean, because things aren't exactly, they're not all exactly where they were before. We had the electrical problems back in Memorial Day.
For folks who have never seen our studio, I would say that the seat Drew sits in is not unlike the workstation for Homer Simpson, the Sector 7G at the power plant. Maybe George Jetson would have a similar sort of deal there at Sprockets, but it's
Spacely's.
Mm-hmm. A couple different controls, couple different screens. But when you know which ones you're supposed to push, a lot of the mystery goes away. But yeah, we're all the best to Drew. Miss him here in the studio, but we will welcome him back when he is 100%.
Well, let's see if we can figure out how to get phones up because we want to hear from you. And we have a call on the Drive hotline sponsored by Skybar. That number, 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840, on the Drive text box presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors. They also sponsor the podcast, available however you listen to podcasts. Go to your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron, or go to ESPNAU.com and use the Podcast Center.
And let's get to the Drive hotline, and Tex gets us started. Hey, Tex, how's it going?
Hey, guys. How y'all been?
Pretty good.
Doing all right, Tex.
Good. Sorry. I was in a place for a couple weeks that it was difficult to get your signal because I couldn't remember the time change.
Tex, Tex, before you get to whatever you called about, can I ask about because it's the first time I got to talk to you since media days, and Mississippi State's new quarterback, Blake Shapen, was the quarterback at Baylor for a couple of years. But before that, I believe he's a Lafayette kid. But he was the best baseball player in the state coming out of high school, and has he's chosen to focus on playing quarterback instead of, I want to say he was a shortstop, but I don't know all that much about his baseball career, which is why I'm asking you. You familiar with Mr. Shapen's work at all?
I know the name. If I'm not mistaken, he was a shortstop pitcher at St. Thomas More in Lafayette. most people thought he was going to get drafted, and I'm pretty sure that's the same guy. That's on the other side of the river. We don't talk about those people very much. No, I'm just kidding. Lafayette's always had that school. St. Thomas More's always had a real good baseball program.
Yeah, he was.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was gonna say he was Mississippi State's representative at media days. He's the new quarterback there after playing at Baylor the last couple of seasons. But there were multiple questions about his baseball career from his days at. Lafayette kid, I believe, also may have finished his career in Shreveport. By the end of it. But it was his offers in baseball and football are hilarious. He had the world at his fingertips coming out of high school.
Yes. Well, so I didn't hear anything about media days. I was not in a place where I got any of that news. For the last couple of weeks, they're kind of a blur. So, but Bill, by the way, I just want to let you know, I love the way Dan answers the phone. He said, "Who this be?" And I'm just kidding. He was very professional when he answered the telephone. Kind of surprised me. He was very strong voice, very professional. I'm not saying it's because you, Dan, because it was not Drew.
No, he doesn't sound like Drew. No, you're right.
Yeah, Drew's often soft-spoken. So Dan did a great job answering the phone. I think so. I just wanted to mess with you a little bit, Dan. It's interesting you were talking baseball. So I talked earlier today with the former major leaguer, and we were talking about Paul Skeens. And I asked him, you know, what would he do at the plate against Skeens? He goes, "Well, considering I was right about 50% of the time, I'd just be guessing fastball, and sooner or later I'm getting one that I could hit hard."
Well, you're going to get one that's thrown hard for sure.
Well, we'll never back down from hard. So it's interesting thing is the first, and we talked about this as Skeens was coming out of college without a breaking pitch, at least one thrown out of the same, blended out of the same spot, the same arm release that he could consistently throw for strikes.
He's got one now.
And he said, that's the first thing he said. He goes, "Now you watch film on him, and it's blended really well. It's very difficult to see."
Hey, and he's invented that new name, the splinker. So,
yes. Well, you got to have gigantic hands to throw that thing. And having shook hands with that young man before, his hands are huge. So what was the overall take? And I know this is probably redundant to most people on Auburn coming out of media day.
Yeah, I think that Auburn is in that list of teams where they don't project as contenders this year to people, but if things break right, they could slip into that conversation. You know, the teams outside of the top five or six in the conference. Not to say there aren't question marks. I mean, we were just talking about it in the first hour, Tex. LSU might be one of the top five or six teams in the SEC this year on paper, or projected to be one of the top five or six teams in the conference. And they have no shortage of question marks, right? Based on you're replacing Jaden Daniels, and the defense had issues at times last year, and still folks feel pretty good. But I think I would say Auburn is in that category with Oklahoma and A&M and Tennessee and Kentucky of teams that are maybe a step behind the bona fide contenders this year. But if things break right, any one of those teams could surprise some people and win a game or two that folks don't think they're going to win right now.
Auburn's definitely flying under the radar, I think. Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people just look at the numbers that Peyton Thorne put up last year and go, that team can't be any better than around 9 or 10 in the SEC. If he has that support, then Auburn could do much better. But that's pretty much the feeling, I think, that most everybody had is, you know, they don't expect Auburn to make that big step offensively.
Well, it's interesting. I've seen a interview with Peyton Thorne, who I think number one looks a little bit leaner, but he looks thicker through the shoulders. He's looking leaner overall. But the first thing that caught my eye is that his confidence level in a speaking way comes across a lot better right now than I think it did last year at any time.
I don't think there's...
I'm not sure he was ever comfortable last year.
No, I mean, last year it was like there were as many questions about Robbie Ashford as there were about Peyton. And
that was my question to him in the small room text. My question to Peyton Thorne was, does it feel more like your team this year, and could that impact how you play? Because last year, and I let him go into the reasons that, that maybe it didn't feel like his team last year. You know, he could decide how much of that he wanted to talk about, but yeah, and he went into a lot of it. You know, showing up in the summer, having to meet everyone and learn names and adjust to a new conference and a new city and a new part of the country, and then also go out and be a quarterback and not have the reps in spring practice to do all of that. Like it's a tall task for even a very talented quarterback. And I think this year, between the upgrades on the roster around Peyton Thorne and the fact that he's had a much more normal offseason as a quarterback and an offseason where he gets to be QB1 the entire time, like I think there's ample reason to think that could lead to a better season, a more confident season, because we've seen it happen with other quarterbacks around the country where the year, you know, when things settle down and they get year two, they're better quarterbacks more often than not than they were during that turbulent first season.
Yeah, I hate to make this comparison, but Joe Burrow had a rough first season in the Southeastern Conference, and I'm not saying that that's what we're going to get, but there's a lot of similarities to that situation.
I'd say Jaden Daniels too, right, Tex?
I mean, right. They got benched at Auburn.
Defense got better the second year.
Yeah,
they got better. Their defense got better the second year of each of those two quarterbacks, and I think we're better defensively too. So it should be very interesting. By the way, Bill, before I left to go for a while when we went on vacation, is that I talked to my friend in Arizona, and he goes, "Don't ask the blankety blank question." And I said, "What are you talking about?" He goes, "Yes, I've talked to the scout that said Skeens ought to go 7, 8, 9, or 10 instead of us trading up early to get him."
Well, let me tell you, that guy who you're talking about, I thought about you today when I was flipping around on the radio, and I heard one of the morning shows, the MLB show on Sirius, and it had a former GM, and I don't remember if it was Steve Phillips or it was somebody else, and David Artsma, and they were talking about the Diamondbacks acquiring AJ Puck, and they said how huge that was. He said, the former GM said, because everybody knows Brent Strom is the best pitching coach in Major League Baseball, and he will know what to do, and nobody is better at getting pitchers to fulfill their potential than Brent Strom.
Well, I've known him now for 14-plus years, and I've watched him look at film and talk to guys in a big league clubhouse and just shake your head as to, how did you see that? I kind of feel confident in what I can see. He sees stuff that, and is able to get guys to do stuff that others haven't been able to do. There's a reason at mid 73, 74 that he's still in the big
league.
Yeah,
no kidding.
That and the fact he can't quit work. He just can't quit working. But
he was retired. Yeah, so he was retired he was retired for like 4 weeks in 2021, right?
He lives in Tucson until he got home to Tucson. Yeah, retired.
Until he got home to Tucson, and
went down and talked to him.
The Diamondbacks GM was in his driveway when he got home to
pretty much.
He got home to Tucson. Hey, I like what he's doing.
Off the record, Dan. You're pretty close. Maybe not the first thing.
That's amazing.
You're pretty close.
That's amazing. And right, and he's done amazing work with Brandon Pfaadt. You know, a young pitcher who's really coming into his own in Arizona.
Well, I mean, if they get everybody healthy, look out for the D-backs. Yep. I mean, you know, they made that big run last year, got all the way to the series.
Absolutely. All right, guys, I appreciate it. Y'all take care.
All right, Tex, great hearing from you. 334-321-1390. Yeah, that was another deal. That one's not going to get a ton of publicity. The Diamondbacks picking up AJ Puck. AJ Puck is a massive left-hander who his numbers look okay. He has been excellent out of the bullpen. He struggled when they tried to make him
His full season numbers okay. include his time as a starter.
Four starts where he just got racked.
But if you pay attention to, I think you got to look at sort of floating numbers. And in the case of a reliever, I want to know what he's done the last 4 weeks, the last 6 weeks, something like that. That's a better representation of what you're getting right now. And It's not the case for every baseball player.
No.
But I think you're talking about, if you're talking about adding a reliever at the trade deadline, I'm much more interested in what he's been the last 6 weeks than what he's been all season.
Well, I mean, if you look at him over the last 2 years strictly as a reliever, he's been outstanding.
And he's been one of the best relievers in baseball over the last 6 weeks or so, too. Right. Like, that's another thing where he's been, I mean, if you look at the numbers as a reliever, and again, not
there's an SEC product. He's a Gator.
Oof. Yeah, and he'll be and he's got a better shot to play important baseball games.
Oh yes, he does in Arizona than he did in Miami.
Than he did in Miami, which is seemingly waving the white flag.
Oh yeah,
we'll see what
they're
happens.
They're going to trade. They will trade just about anybody, I think.
We'll see what happens with the Jazz man. I would think the closer too.
I think Tanner Scott's.
I think Tanner
gone
Scott
somewhere. There are a lot of teams looking for bullpen. And he's having a fabulous year.
Are any of the bats, aside from Jazz?
Oh, yeah. Are Josh Bell.
Josh Bell.
Josh Bell. I mean, there are quite a few teams looking for a first baseman.
And then they added a corner in the third baseman, too,
Berger?
Right? Yeah, Berger was his. I don't know how he's been hitting this year.
I think they'll trade just about anybody.
Yeah, and I could see any number of those guys ending up on contenders, mm-hmm. at least.
I could see him keeping one of their, you know, one or two of their young starters. Starting pitchers.
Max Meyer maybe coming up might not be a guy they'd want to deal necessarily.
Pretty much everyone else. I read something a while ago that said he might be coming up to showcase so that they could see if they could throw him in on the deal. What are they looking for? If you're going to be trading your young guys, all you're going to do is get young guys back.
I would wonder if they'd want to trade Max Meyer for multiple young guys because they need to restock that system because it's not as though like they're in the double whammy situation of they probably are a bottom five roster right now in terms of talent, and I don't know if people necessarily look at their system as a system loaded with guys that are
a lot of their young guys that they have, they've gotten from other teams. Yeah. I mean, one of their better young players right now is Xavier Edwards.
So it would make sense to, I mean, even prospects that are close to contributing, turning them into multiple prospects that you can use to stock the system, maybe. But you're doing that, and you're sort of sentencing yourself to an even lengthier rebuild mm-hmm. if you're trading guys like Max Meyer away to turn them into prospects.
All right. Again, we'll look at some of the deals that have gone down and more. Talk a little more about Big Cat. Love to hear from you as we get to our first break of hour number two here on the Friday Drive.
Hey, this is Kevin Tutto, owner of Baumhauer's Victory Grill in Auburn.
At ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Friday afternoon. 21 minutes after 5 o'clock, Bill and Dan here in the studio. And we'd love for you to join in, 334-321-1390. I was just looking, just following along with some of the updates that are going on with different players showing up for Big Cat Weekend and an update. This didn't have anything to do with Big Cat, but it's rather interesting that Jamarian Gordon, who is a four-star cornerback out of Jackson, Alabama, good-sized corner at 6'2", 195. He's been committed to Alabama since May, has flipped his commitment to Central Florida. So Gus Malzahn picking up a flip from a defensive back in South Alabama who'd been committed to the Tide.
Would you think that, I mean, Auburn's, I would imagine Auburn is, you know, picks up a commitment just because it's traditionally been the case over Big Cat Weekend. I don't know who that could be.
I'll be surprised if Auburn doesn't pick up a couple of commitments by Monday morning. We'll see if they happen tomorrow. I mean, there's a lot of buzz around Jared Smith, who is a five-star edge out of Thompson.
And I have to imagine, I mean, committing in front of the group like that, if you're ready to do it, would be a cool feeling.
Oh, yeah,
Perry
yeah.
Thompson
I mean, if you're ready
year.
To do it with you know, 15, 16 players that are already there that are committed, yeah, you'd think that you might do it. Anquan Fagans is also from Thompson, and he is, you know, he's somebody Auburn has been on. His brother, Antoine, we talked about him. He is a transfer that right now, I believe, is a preferred walk-on. But, I mean, he's here in school. Blake Woodby's another defensive back. He's the defensive back that was committed to Ohio State. That is a teammate of an Auburn commitment in Bryce Diaz. So, I mean, I think those are some guys that sure wouldn't be a shock if any of those committed to Auburn this weekend or shortly thereafter. So I think they've got a chance of adding a player a player, a commitment or two.
All right, we should mention the rabbit hole I went down because of the NIL commitment from UCF.
Yeah.
Well, so okay, so the player from UCF, the player from Jackson, Mississippi,
flips to UCF.
And I remember thinking.
And you were wondering, then your first thing you said was, I wonder what UCF's NIL situation is.
Yeah, you know, I haven't heard as much of, and that's not a school you necessarily associate with. Like, there's not a very famous, wealthy UCF alum that everyone knows about. So, oh, yeah, that guy from UCF.
Right.
There's not a Phil Knight of UCF necessarily, but I know that's a school
not
like UCF.
Not I know of,
but
no.
But there's a school, but that's a school that's had, you know, tens of thousands of, you know, hundreds of thousands
well,
of living
they
alumni.
They 40-something thousand students.
Yes. I mean, and many of them have done very well in various industries, and there was an NIL tidbit I remembered about UCF.
Which, well, yeah, you remember.
I knew there was a connection.
Yeah. I knew that Sean Tuohy's son
yes.
was very high in the athletic administration at UCF under Gus.
Now, Sean Tuohy, if you remember, was the coach in the Blind Side. His son is, if you
yeah, Sean
the-
Tuohy, Sean Tuohy, by the way, former Ole Miss point guard.
Yes.
And he was one of those guys.
Lifelong friend of Hugh Freeze?
Yes. Right? He was one of those guys that opposing fans love to hate.
Oh, sure.
He was. He was an undersized. Took a lot of charges.
You can say
I
it. Mean, white dude.
Yeah,
that's also that helps.
I mean, one of those kind of that the fans are on constantly.
Sure.
And he's sort of in your face when he was a really good player. But yeah, Sean Tuohy was the was the
a chesty, arrogant basketball.
Yeah, but
player
in the movie The Blind Side, I mean,
he's the coach. He's the coach of the team, and his son. You know,
they adopted.
Yes, Hugh Freeze the coach?
Yeah,
Hugh Freeze the coach.
Hugh Freeze was a coach there in town. I don't know that he was the first coach. But Sean and his family. And
the Tuohys are the family from The Blind Side. SJ is the son.
Sean Jr.
In the film. He is now the executive director of the NIL Collective at UCF. He's a show, yeah. SJ Tuohy is the executive director of the Kingdom, which is UCF's official NIL collective for athletics. And so I remember thinking there was some connection with the Blind Side family and what
yeah,
Gus
Michael
was doing.
Orr. Michael Orr was adopted by the Tuohys and Sean, or they took in Michael. Yes, and then Sean Jr. is now at Central Florida.
Yeah, SJ is the executive director of the Kingdom, which was I knew there was some
the
official
Kingdom. Work. I like that.
The Kingdom is
they're Knights.
They're the Knights.
So, yeah,
they're the Knights, and this is the and that's the Kingdom down there. So and you also got the Magic Kingdom just within.
Well, that's true.
Just within a short drive away too. So it's there's a couple reasons for that to be
it makes me think of Game of Thrones and House of Dragons.
One of the details that they included in the video game. I have not seen this yet, but I've heard about it, is that they will have rocket launches in the background at UCF games there are times when you can see something launch from Canaveral or mm-hmm. something launch, and you can see it from the stadium. Apparently there will be times during UCF's games when rockets are going off in the background.
Oh, that is cool.
Satellites are being launched into space and
oh,
stuff.
Oh, man. So anyway, yes, players are making their way in to campus for Big Cap Weekend. Let's see. I was going through. Well, I'm. You were talking about possible commits, and I mentioned three of the more highly touted players who are in town. I'll tell you another one to keep an eye on is Derek Smith. Jeff called yesterday, remember, and was talking about him. He's out of Southside Selma, four-star athlete that Alabama. He's been committed to Alabama, but Alabama wants him as a safety. Auburn really likes him as a wide receiver. So, you know, keep an eye out there. I mean, so those are some of the highly touted players that are visiting this weekend. Going to be interesting. Tyler Lockhart, who, remember, was sort of a surprise commitment to Auburn out of Mississippi a while back, then decommitted from Auburn a couple of weeks ago. I believe he's expected in, if he's not already in, this weekend for Big Cat. So, yes, it's going to be there are going to be quite a few guys in. They've got to be loving the weather right now, hoping that this holds up through tomorrow. That would be very nice because they do so many things outside. We can. You want me to run down some of the other guys that are coming in?
Yeah, lay it on me.
All right, some of the other players, and we'll go by how they're ranked by the composite rankings there on 247. The other players that aren't committed to Auburn. Let me see. Zion Grady from another edge. Boy, Auburn, you can't get too many great pass rushers. Somebody the other day posted a question on one of the message boards. Why is Hugh Freeze going after so many of these edges? Because it's great to have. Yeah. You can't have too many of them. You want everybody that you can get after a quarterback.
Because look at how many Kirby Smart has signed the last like 5 years.
Look at how many Alabama signed.
Yeah, that's part of it.
That's why. Well, Zion is.
You don't want to build the whole plane out of edge rushers. You want to have
Too. If I have a bunch of edge rushers, the chances are maybe a couple of them might grow out of that and become ridiculously talented interior guys.
And one or two of them might get smaller and be an outside linebacker too.
That is true.
The die is not cast in just that position. But you know what? If they just produce at that position, that can be very helpful too.
Oh yeah, so Grady, by the way, is an Ohio State commit out of Enterprise. Some of the other players, out of the 25 class, Sam Turner's a receiver that Auburn's gotten on lately. He's a Georgia Tech commit out of Georgia. Let's see, Shakai Mills Knight is a running back out of the Baylor School in Tennessee. It is a very strong list. It's going to be interesting. It'll probably be nearly as many 2026 guys as there are 25. And you might go, why is that? Well, when you already have 16 commits for this upcoming class, you don't have nearly as many spots for 25 as you do 26 plus. If you can get a player in and have him in the atmosphere of a Big Cat weekend as he's heading into his junior year and have Auburn on his mind, you've got to step up there in the recruitment. 334-321-1390.
We have a couple pieces of you have the Auburn football, what is it, the dress code earlier today. They announced sort of like what to wear what to wear for your 2024 games. Cal will be the whiteout. Oklahoma will be an orange out. You've got, stripes for the home games against Arkansas at Vanderbilt, Navy for Texas A&M, Navy for the road games except for Kentucky. Orange is the orange on the menu, I guess, for Big Blue.
Yeah, I saw that. We got the note yesterday with our season ticket stuff.
If I were, if they'd asked me, and they didn't, I would have said white out for Oklahoma and wear white jerseys. That would have been because you have the option in conference. In conference, you have the option to wear white at home whenever you want. I would have done a white
out. That's why LSU does that.
I would have done a white out for Oklahoma, and I would have surprised people with the white jerseys at home. Maybe last minute. Maybe that would have been a thing I wouldn't have revealed. It's not a Georgia blackout style. I might have revealed the white jerseys at the very end for Oklahoma. I think that might have been cool. First road game for Oklahoma, first road start for Jackson Arnold, 5 new offensive linemen. I might have tried to make that as a
little possible. I've got a feeling it's still going to be a pretty hostile environment for Oklahoma.
I think they're headed into, especially if Auburn's 4-0, I think they're really headed into a hornet's nest in that situation.
We need to get to our bottom of the hour break. Stick with us. Again, 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. We'll be right back with your calls here on the Friday Drive. With you, and let's get to the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. And Jerry is up next. Hey, Jerry.
Hey, guys. Excited to hear about all the recruits coming in this weekend, and really looking forward to the Monday show to find out.
Oh, yeah. Brian Matthews is probably going to be, worn out, but it'll be great to have him here, talking, because Brian will be over there talking to a lot of the kids that are leaving
And there's traditionally been, usually Auburn comes out of Big Cat weekend having added to the commitment list for the subsequent year. And so I would think that there's a chance. I mean, last year Auburn landed Perry Thompson. It was a big splash. And really
– They got Malcolm Simmons.
Malcolm Simmons, shortly after.
They just gotten DeMarcus Riddick going in.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think Auburn would love to see this, you know, kickstart the 2025 class with an added recruit or two and maybe some more guys down the pipe.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Talk to you later.
All right, have a good weekend, Jerry. 334-321-1390. Mitch is next. Hey, Mitch.
Hey, guys. Is someone in the studio there celebrating a birthday today?
It is in fact my birthday. Thank you for pointing out.
Oh, golly, I was thinking it was Monday for some reason.
Yeah, no, it is.
I thought you and Scott were 9 days.
Stanley Kubrick, 96 years old, or would have been 96 today. Mick Jagger celebrating a birthday as well. Sandra Bullock, among other.
I completely messed up. I was thinking it was the 29th and not the 26th.
I know how old you are. Yeah, I'm celebrating a birthday in my 30s. That's as far as I'll take it. But
yeah, he's
ringing out every drop of my 30s here in the studio.
It may have been a Jerry Lee Lewis song.
What, squeezing out every drop?
No, your birthday.
Well, anyway, guys, since the Olympics have started today,
Did you watch any of the opening ceremonies?
No, I was working. I'm gonna catch, I guess, the replay at 7:30. But I came across an article in the Washington Post, and it's titled "Olympians Are Approaching the Limits of Human Performance." And it pretty much dives into, you know, all these, you know, world records and everything that eventually humans are going to peak, and some of these records are never going to be broken. Like, just as an example, Usain Bolt holds the world record for the 100 meters at like 9.58 seconds. And one of the guys that did a study, I think he did canines and horses. But anyway, his prediction is that the fastest a human will ever be able to run the 100 meters is like 9.48 seconds. So,
see, I'm curious to know, Mitch, what would science have said 100 years ago about the fastest?
What were they saying 50 years ago?
Yeah, like I don't think there probably is a limit, but I would be nervous about assuming we're approaching the peak of it, because
what seems crazier is humans are getting larger. I mean, I don't mean all wider. I mean they are larger than they were years ago. You look back and a couple of hundred years ago, the average height was around 5'6".
I found, and
then it's moved to 5'10". I just wonder as they get larger, could there be possibly a little more? I do agree there has to be a point where, yeah, it's you're not going to go any faster without some other kind of aid.
But some of the ways that training and treatment have changed. Mm-hmm. It's the story of the demand for ice at the Olympics this summer is like it's putting a strain on the infrastructure to have enough ice for all of the athletes. I was reading about this that there were 22 tons of ice at the competition venues. At the Tokyo 2020 Olympics for medical mm-hmm. purposes, there's another 42 tons of ice provided in the Olympic Village.
Wow.
The estimates for the 2024 Paris Olympics, 1,624 tons of ice have been requested for between Olympic villages for training and treatment and to have them
on-site. That's unbelievable.
They have revised the estimate because they could not fulfill the public tender. 650 tons of ice. That's 450 for the Olympics. Another 200 tons of ice for the Paralympics. This is for
and that takes a lot of ice makers.
So only 10% of the treatments prescribed in the 2004 Athens Olympics were for cold water immersion, and that since like it's now turned into the like it's the first line of defense for a lot of these athletes in treatment, and yeah, it's a like just one of the ways things have changed. Like the amount the demand for ice at these at these Summer Olympics is a crazy is a crazy strain on organizers and the folks having to fulfill the orders.
Well, I guess they're gonna have to go to the Alps and get some snow. Speaking of record, and you guys are baseball guys, what baseball records do you think will never be broken? Now, the one that pops into my head is Cy Young's wins in a career.
Well, I have one. I have an answer to this question, but it's cheating, right? Like, I have one that I'm certain there's a record I'm absolutely certain will never be broken in baseball.
What is it? One of the first time records?
It's Tatis. Like the
2 grand slams in an inning?
Off the same pitcher.
Yes. No, that won't be. I doubt that Cal Ripken's consecutive game streak's going to be touched.
Fernando Tatis Sr. 25 years ago, Mitch, hit 2 grand slams in the same inning off the same pitcher. Right? To break that
record. To leave that pitcher in.
To break that record, he would have to give up 3 grand slams to the same guy in the same inning. I don't think
that would have to be. You know what that would have to be? That would have to be a position player that's been brought in a blowout game,
and you let him.
And they let him just stay there no matter what.
Let him give 20 runs in an inning.
Yeah,
like So, but I mean, as far as competitive records,
yeah, you know, like career records. Like I think Hack Wilson had 190 RBIs in 1 year. You know, I was thinking of records like that.
Yeah, that one probably. I don't know that Pete Rose's hits record is going to be broken.
Okay. Yeah. Now, the hitting streak too, because DiMaggio still has that.
56. That's right.
Can't imagine we'll ever see someone who got walked the way Barry Bonds did anytime soon. Like the thought
probably
of someone.
Probably not.
I mean, Bonds had seasons with 200 plus walks. The thought of a player being able to draw 200 plus walks in a season anytime soon just feels extraterrestrial, right? Like I'd be curious to know who led baseball in walks last year. And how many they had, and if it was anywhere in the
as probably not much over 110.
Yeah, triple digits. If there was a triple digit,
there may have been. I mean, there's usually Pete Alonso's guys like that can get walked 100 times.
200, right? I mean,
no, 200 is ridiculous.
Oh, by the way, Bonds in 2004 had 232 walks. That is the most in a single season in baseball history.
Now, stolen bases. I used to love stealing.
No, I don't think you're going to see 130 steals either. Isn't that the record? I think it is.
Ricky Henderson?
Yeah, I mean, because right now, Ellie De La Cruz is the fastest to 50 since 1988. And in the season's two-thirds over.
Right. Wow.
So, well, I mean,
you know, you guys are saying how basketball changed. It looks like baseball's changed a little bit too.
Oh, it has with the inability to throw to first base just over and over and over again, and the base size increasing just a little bit. There's so much more advantage to the runner now, and it's just tougher to catch base stealers.
Soto, Harper, and Judge are guys who draw 100,
yeah,
100, you're
right, 100, you're right.
100 to 150 walks in a season. 230? Like
That's more than 50% more.
and then you're also, I mean, you're 100 to 150 of those were intentional, right? And so in some of those Bond seasons. So yeah, I would think.
Okay, to put this in context for me, because I'm not a baseball guy like you guys are, when Barry had 232 walks in a season, how many at bats? Well, it doesn't count as an at-bat.
No, it doesn't count as a plate appearance.
Yeah, how many
he probably got 700 plate appearances because that's one of the reasons. I mean, his batting average and his OPS are just ridiculous.
I'll tell you, okay, Mitch, in 2004, Barry Bonds had 617 plate appearances.
So more than a third of his plate appearances were walks.
Yeah, he was, and then there were also 45 homers in the resulting, yeah, so that gets you a .362 average, a .609 on base, an .812 slugging, and
.812 OPS isn't bad.
.1422 on the OPS, which is your slugging percentage plus your on base percentage. .660 he was safe 61% of the time, when he went to bat.
61% of the times he came to the plate, he got on base.
Yeah. Like it's
wow.
It's yeah. That's how you explain it to people, is that for every 10 times that he was at bat, it only resulted in an out 4 of them.
Whereas wow. A great player results in out 7 out of 10 times.
Right now. Like
yes.
Yes.
Well, history. Yeah. In the history of baseball.
Is there a 400 on base in the league right now? I'd wonder if maybe Soto or somebody at the top.
You know what?
Would
I heard one last night.
Okay.
Lamont Wade is over 400.
So but the very best players are making out 6 out of 10 times in Major League Baseball right now. And Bonds had years where he was making outs. Like he was on base over 60% of the time in his at-bats in some of those seasons in the early 2000s.
Wow, that's amazing. All right, guys. Well, I guess I segued you guys into talking a little baseball here on a Friday.
That's great.
But,
trade deadline's coming up in just 4 days. I like it. I mean, it's fun talking baseball.
Thank you, Mitch.
All right, guys.
Have a great weekend, Mitch.
We'll talk to you soon.
All right, take care. Let's get to our final break, and let's hit some of the highlights of the trades that have been done. And some of the things we might see before the end of business on Tuesday. We'll do that. And, of course, if you want to join us, give us a call, 321-1390, here on The Drive.
Did you know that Dixie Electric Plumbing and Air service fee is good for 30 days for all?
Final segment of The Drive here on this Friday afternoon. Bill and Dan. And, yes, Monday. Really looking forward to the Monday show. I mean, always do with Brian Matthews coming in. B-Matt, his Monday musings and everything, but we'll get him to give us his in-depth, review of Big Cat. And I feel confident that there will be an addition at least to the Auburn commitment list.
When we mention Brian Matthews and the Monday Musings, we should also mention that they're sponsored by Uncle Keith's Red Sauce.
I know. I just finished off a bottle
local Southern
night before last. We've got another brand new one.
It's not, because I've had someone ask if it was pasta sauce. Uncle Keith's Red Sauce is
salsa.
Southern style salsa, and it's great.
And you know, it's funny.
Find it in your local retailers.
We've
ask
got
for it by name.
Got a 2.5-year-old granddaughter, and she, anything that goes on food or can go with food, she calls it sauce.
Yeah, okay.
And I wonder if that's sort of, because people have at times go, well, what is it? Because it says it's salsa. But, I mean, you can use it for so many different things. But I thought that's probably where that came, because Kennedy when she's eating, she'll always, as she's getting, as she's getting tired of what she's having, she wants some sauce.
Yeah.
And that can be whipped cream. It can be... like
where's she on
barbecue sauce, ketchup.
I was going to say, where's she on ketchup?
Yeah. Oh, that's sauce. Yeah. It's all just, she's just different colored sauces for her. So, but Uncle Keith's Red Sauce is the real deal. It's really good stuff.
My niece would, virtually any main course style of protein, if you're trying to get her to try something new, if a little bit of A1 is all it would take. And just about, I mean, from pork to lamb to chicken to duck, like you could get her to try stuff.
It's amazing with kids what they'll try, and it's like, I never thought of that, and I probably wouldn't. She actually thinks I think peanut butter sauce. Smooth peanut butter.
Okay.
Anything that is not firm.
It's like a Thai food
like
sort of
sauce.
Thing, right? You get like a peanut sauce with your protein.
I guess.
That's not totally. I mean, I've never put,
I mean, she dipped like chicken in peanut butter
it.
Actually doesn't sound bad.
There are delicacies that will, will have, sort of peanut inspired sauces. I'm not, it's not my cup of tea per se, but I mean, gets them to eat their dinner.
Oh yeah, that's right. Anyway,
you thinking about checking out Cheers on the Corner.
Cheers on the Corner this evening. It's getting underway in just a few minutes.
Looks like could be beautiful.
Looks gorgeous.
Beautiful weather. If you're thinking about
going, gonna be a little warm.
Gonna be a little warm. Dress appropriately, but could be beautiful weather in downtown Auburn. A really cool event. Local merchants.
And as you said, Auburn Networks, a presenting sponsor.
Auburn Network will be there, go say hi to the team there with the Wings Wagon, and maybe, well, could have some koozies, could have some. I don't want to make any promises here.
I saw
some gear.
I mean, boxes of gear.
All right, good.
So being loaded. before everybody was headed downtown.
ESPN 106.7 WANI, Wings 94.3, 96.3 W Lee. We got all the, you know, AU100, like the lots of the whole family of stations with gear. So check them out there at Cheers on the Corner near Tumors.
Yeah, so that, I mean, it should be an interesting weekend. Mitch mentioned the opening ceremonies. I saw a little of it while it was live. Raining there in Paris as boats coming down the Seine, coming in, you know, headed into the stadium. You can watch it again a little later on this evening. As we said, at least 10 current or former Auburn athletes are involved, and a few of them going to be getting underway over the weekend.
If you have Peacock, I think you know a lot of the events are available to you. And if you subscribe to cable, NBC and the NBC family of stations, including USA. Did we say E?
Yes, yeah, E.
Isn't the E
is involved as well.
E's going to have some as well. So, yeah, check your local listings. But a lot of Olympic athletics on the dial this weekend.
All right, we hope Drew gets better. He should be back on Monday. Dan and I are planning on being here. Brian Matthews will join us. We hope you will as well. We're out of time here on the Friday Drive. Have a great weekend, everybody. We are out of here.